This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Myers, he's got a two-on-one with Laine out of the penalty box. Myers across the line, shooting, scores! For Truba, a blast. Eddie fired it wide. Rebound out in front, they score! Mark Scheifele with his team-leading 35th. It's a power play goal. It's 1-0 for the Jets. Slap shot from the point, blocked it away by Brossoit. Rebound, they score. From the goal line, William Karlsson off the skate of Brossoit, tucked back in behind him. And 1:24 into this one, Vegas opens up the scoring.
Exchange between Vesalainen and Griffith. Now it's sent out in front. Chance for Appleton. He scores! Vesalainen trying to get inside, gets the net, shoots. He scores! Christian
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca and via the iHeartRadio app, we say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We have 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday morning. Alongside Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. We welcome you to the program. That was the week that was for the Winnipeg Jets and the Manitoba Moose. The Moose victorious last night in Colorado Springs, a big victory for the Moose over the Colorado Eagles as they continue their battle to make the playoffs. And of course, tonight is the big matchup between the Winnipeg Jets and the Nashville Predators. The Jets needing 1 point to qualify officially for the 2019 Stanley Cup playoffs. I say good morning without further ado to my colleagues Ezra Ginsberg and Dave Minuk. Gentlemen, good to see you on this Saturday morning.
Good morning.
That was a very low-key good morning there, Mr. Ginsberg.
We're glad to have you back.
It's nice to be back. I was off, of course, last week, enjoying a little bit of quality family time, but I missed you boys, and it's good to be back in studio with you on this unseasonably warm spring day.
Yeah, we pretended like we missed you.
I appreciate that. That's all I need. I just need you to fake it, and I'm good with that.
Yeah, as he was happy running the contest, he said, I'm going to take the spot of Drew, and he did a good job.
Yes, kudos to you, Ezzy. Kudos to you, Dave. And, of course, Sean Asor, our producer this morning, was also on air with you boys. So kudos to Sean for doing a great job as well last week. We get started with, as I mentioned, looking back at the week that was for the Winnipeg Jets. And, of course, we do want to hear.
Do we have to?
Well, we do, because the Jets had a good week, a 2-1 record. Of course, Thursday's game against the Vegas Golden Knights wasn't so good, with a 5-0 shellacking that you could sort of feel coming early in the game. It didn't look like the Jets had much in the tank. But the two wins against the Los Angeles Kings and the Anaheim Ducks were two of the worst games you're going to see all year in the NHL. The Kings and the Ducks just, I mean, their season just needs to end at this point in time. They showed no heart. They showed no life.
Well, the Ducks had a good game last night against the Sharks.
Okay, well, I guess you never know.
But at least the game against LA, the game was tied in the third period.
You're right.
The game on Wednesday night against the Ducks, I agree with you, was one of the worst regular season games, not just regular season games this year, but one of the worst regular season games I've ever seen in all of the years I've been watching hockey. I'm talking 30 years. Like, what? And I tweeted this, Drew, and I know you saw it.
I know.
What was Corey Perry doing out there? Corey Perry looked like a guy who had a bad day at work, and he was just taking it out on his rec league opponent. Like, that was like rec league hockey. And you know I love Corey Perry. I mean, Corey Perry's had a great NHL career, but
he's a shell of himself.
What was he doing? I mean, he was just running around and doing stupid things. Like, it was almost like he didn't care about his teammates. He didn't care if they won the game. He didn't care about the season, anything. I mean, as you mentioned, the Ducks are not making the playoffs. Neither are the Kings. But at least the Ducks have turned it around a little bit in the sense that they've been respectable, right? Under Bob Murray, they've been a 500 team.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So at least they've kind of, after that ridiculous, 12 or 13 game losing streak, they've turned it around. But wow, that Ducks team is bad. If it wasn't for John Gibson, they'd be last in the entire league.
It was two bad hockey games, and the Jets, those are difficult games to play for a team like the Winnipeg Jets. The Jets, who, of course, have their sights set on the playoffs, who, as I mentioned, you're a point out of qualifying for the playoffs officially. You're playing against two teams that are unmotivated, not especially skilled, especially, the Kings, just have a lack of offensive talent. So do the Ducks, for that matter, although they should be better. I guess, they have some players who are more interesting than the Kings are offensively. And those are two difficult games for the Jets to play in. And to their credit, they kept it simple. they were able to, you know, even though the Kings came back to tie that game, the Jets were able to end up being victorious. And then the Anaheim Ducks game, you know, it was a 1-0 game late into the third period until Kyle Connor deflected the shot from Tyler Myers. But everything about those two games against the Kings and the Ducks were just dull. They were just dull hockey games.
And no, they were dull. And you're right, though. The Jets, give them credit. I mean, they pick up the 4 points, and they got the job done, right? And you're right. It sometimes is difficult to get up against the bottom feeders, and that's maybe why the Jets lost two games to the Senators earlier this season, right? Because you're looking at that team and you're saying, okay, now this team really has nothing after the trade deadline. But even before the trade deadline, I mean, that team just wasn't very good. One of the worst teams in the league. So in that sense, yeah, you have to give the Jets credit. They got the job done, even though there was every reason to believe that there maybe could have been a letdown game. But unbelievable. Specifically the Ducks. Like, to me, the Kings have been bad all year long.
Yeah.
But the Ducks earlier in the season were still in the playoff race, right? Remember, even in the I'm losing my voice already here, Drew, but even in the middle of that 12-game losing streak, I mean, the Ducks were still, what, 3 or 4 points out of a playoff spot? So they were still competitive. But, you know, a guy like Perry, I mean, Ryan Getzlaf, you got to feel for him specifically because he's a Hall of Famer for sure. I mean, he's going to the Hall of Fame. I don't care what anybody says. But you look at the supporting cast he's got there, and I realize that players like Troy Terry and Max Jones and, you know, Daniel Sprong has had a nice bounce back season for him, right? Because in Pittsburgh, he wasn't really doing anything. But where's the pride there? Like, there was just no pride for me from the Ducks. It just looked like they didn't care at all. It's almost like when the Jets went up 1-0, they accepted defeat.
They were bad hockey games. It's that simple. And then the Jets have to go Thursday night, Dave, into Vegas. And the Vegas Golden Knights, last time we saw them, the Jets won in Vegas. They had that impressive effort where Patrick Laine had the 2 power play goals and was able to get off the schneid and, you know, end that goal-scoring drought he was in at that point in time. We'll talk about his current goal-scoring drought coming up next segment. But, you know, the Jets went into Vegas, and it was shortly after the trade deadline, and the Jets really hammered that Golden Knights team. And then on Thursday night, this is a Golden Knights team that has been playing great hockey as of late. They look like one of certainly as big of a threat as anybody in the Pacific Division. You know, San Jose, Vegas, Calgary, it's going to be a hell of a battle to see who comes out of that division this year once the playoffs begin. The Golden Knights just had all the jump. The Jets, you know, really didn't have much in their tank on Thursday night, and I think that's what led to a 5-0 defeat that was, you know, was pretty much game over when the Golden Knights got that shorthanded goal and Laurent Brossoit left the game, you know, almost simultaneously with that injury, as you saw him stretching just before that shot. And it was just a bad night all around for the Winnipeg Jets on Thursday night.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, obviously William Karlsson got it started early in the game for Vegas, and you just felt like it was one of those games. It was going to be one of those games. Obviously, Blake Wheeler drops the gloves with Mark Stone right off the faceoff, basically. And so you're sitting there going like, okay, this is not what I was expecting from Blake Wheeler. It's not what I'm expecting from the game. And then, of course, yeah, you know, you have a Vegas team that's 9-1-0 in their last 10. They're red hot. I mean, obviously, there's not a lot of time left in the season, but this is a Vegas team that we were talking was locked into that third spot in the Pacific. And now, I mean, they are only 6 points back, which is seems like a lot at this point in the season to try and make up. But for the longest time, we weren't even talking about them in that first or second spot. It was really just Vegas was going to be locked in. Mm-hmm. So Vegas is really, you know, hitting, firing on all cylinders right now. So you got to give them credit. They played a really good game, and they're playing some really good hockey, four straight for them. But, you know, I mean, again, the Jets, just to your point, Drew, I just didn't think they had a lot in the tank. I thought they were, you know, I don't want to say they were defeated. They, you know, they looked like they tried to have some pushback. It was only a 2-0 game after 20 minutes. So, I mean, it's not a not insurmountable, especially from a team like the Jets that have as much firepower as they do. But, you know, like I think you said, that no-set goal with shorthanded just kind of seemed to break them a little bit. And then, obviously, Riley Smith and William Karlsson finished it off.
So. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290. We're looking back at the week that was for the Winnipeg Jets, going 2-1 on the week with the victories in L.A. and Anaheim and then the loss in Vegas. And Dave, you mentioned the fight really right off the draw between Blake Wheeler and Mark Stone. I wonder if that's Blake Wheeler sensing the mood in the locker room pregame that we don't have necessarily the energy level right now that I want, so I'm going to go out there and I'm going to try and maybe inject some life into our team by dropping
like
the
energy level in the first 29 seconds of the game.
That maybe he felt that the dressing room before the game was not the way it should be. You, I mean, you're in the room day in, day
Wheeler
out.
Wheeler can sense energy for sure. I mean, he knows what the energy in the dressing room is like. And I agree with you.
So maybe he thought the energy level at puck drop or just pregame wasn't where it needs to be because
Well, it turns out he was right.
Because of the team being tired, the game, the
well,
team
no, because they
played.
Lost 5-0.
Well, I know, but the, you know, it's the back-to-back. It's the third and four nights. You go in there, you sense the room. Hey, I might need to, as the captain, I might need to do something unexpected to see if I can jolt the room.
I see what you're saying, Drew. I don't necessarily know that,
I don't
that
know
he
if
planned
he did
to drop the gloves.
I think he did. When you drop the gloves 29 seconds into the game, I think you're looking to make a statement
Mark
off
Stone
the drop.
Hit Blake Wheeler from behind before they fought.
Yeah, I know.
That's why they fought.
Well, I mean, I think...
I don't think he was planning to fight in the first period, regardless of who it was. I don't think he was looking to pick a fight. Put it that way. I don't agree with you on that. Sorry.
No,
but
fine.
I do agree with you that maybe he sensed that there wasn't a lot of energy in the dressing room. And you're right. Second game of a back-to-back, third game in four nights. It was a little bit peculiar. And this time of the year, I don't necessarily know if you're Paul Maurice, you like to see Blake Wheeler dropping the gloves there. And he doesn't drop the gloves a lot. He has dropped the gloves in previous years. And, you know, it was an okay fight. I don't necessarily know he had to do it there.
Oh, I think he was looking for an excuse, and Mark Stone gave him the excuse with the hit from behind, and he said, okay, you know, I'm willing to not take that. I mean, both teams are trying to probably, the Golden Knights in particular are trying to send a message, because the last time the Jets played there, the Jets humbled them. So the Golden Knights, who are, to Dave's point, 9-1 in their last 10, or they were 8-1 entering that game, and they're playing great hockey, they're looking to set the tone. The Jets are looking to respond to the Golden Knights setting the tone. And Blake Wheeler says, in this instance, he's obviously not going to become Sean Cronin 2.0, but in this instance, he wants to, you know, try and respond to what Vegas is doing and reciprocate with Mark Stone's hit.
At the end of the day, the fight had absolutely no impact on the game.
Absolutely.
They lost the game 5-0. They played like they didn't play well, and they had four shots in the third period. So,
yeah, because you're right. Nothing that the Jets were going to do, it seemed like, on Thursday night was going to change the tone to that game. It's one of those games where you look at the schedule and you know they call it a quote-unquote scheduled loss, where the team knows that it's going to be very difficult to win this game just based on the amount of hockey and the amount of travel that they've been playing. And I know fans tend to scoff at that idea, or fans tend to scoff at the concept that a team can't show up. But the reality is we see it, you know, in certain pockets throughout the season for all teams in the league. And I think Thursday night was one of those quote unquote scheduled losses for the Jets. Ultimately, when you win the first two games, it's not the end of the world that you lose that game to Vegas on Thursday night.
Right, but that's the team you wanted to beat of the three games.
Yes, in theory, but I mean, do you really care who you're beating at this point in time? I mean, you're not, the Jets would say, yeah, we sent our message to Vegas and beating them, you know, a month ago.
Yeah, I do think you care.
Okay, I mean, that's fair. I mean,
I think you put more stock into beating a team like Vegas or Nashville than you do LA or Anaheim.
Had the Jets not beat LA and Anaheim, then their energy levels may be at a different level against Vegas. But having already banked the first 4 points on the road trip, I think that it makes the sag in my mind, given where they are in the schedule, given where they are in terms of injuries, given where they are in terms of just everything about that game, it makes it a little bit more understandable for me. Had they lost to LA and Anaheim, or one of those two teams, and then they go out and they lay an egg against Vegas.
Sure.
It's a different...
I mean, they still lost 5-0. It was a terrible game for them. I mean,
yeah.
You can justify it all you want. And
I mean, at the end of the day...
I don't necessarily agree with your theory, but, I mean, yeah, they beat LA and Anaheim. You expected them to beat LA and Anaheim. They're mm-hmm. terrible teams. And second game of a back-to-back, no team's going to use that as an excuse right now at this point in the season.
No, not publicly.
So, yes, of course, you don't care as much that you lost the game because you won the previous two games, so you still went 2-1 on the road trip, but it was still not a very good effort. So, I mean, it depends how you look at it, right?
Sure.
Dave, I would just simply say that, you know, if you're the Jets, you're not happy with the loss, but you can use that as an impetus to kind of move forward and use that against Nashville, start this homestand, the final homestand of the regular season. And also, think, you know, rationalize it as no Bufflin, no Morrissey. Those are two big factors against a Vegas team. So, I mean, you put those guys in the lineup and you have that kind of effort, it'd be a different story maybe. But without those two major pieces in your lineup, I mean, that's... you know, that definitely plays a role, a factor to me at least, in mitigating that loss.
We want to hear from you. You can do so via Twitter at Illegal Curve. And of course, we're also accepting your text messages. Send your texts to 1290-90. Standard messaging rates do apply. Want to get you in on our conversation about the Winnipeg Jets. When we come back, Patrick Laine struggling to put the puck into the net, particularly at 5-on-5. We discuss his struggles as of late. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Francois Saint-Laurent and Francis Chiron. Shot score! Patrick Laine finds the back of the net on that offside, and the Jets have tied this game up 2-2. Whoa, baby!
Nobody needed that more than Patrick Laine. No goals in his last six games. This comes at even strength. It comes with their team down by a goal, and they needed something to feel good about. 2-on-1, they get numbers through the neutral zone. Laine opens up on his offside. He doesn't dust that off, does he?
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, Dave Minuk with you on Saturday morning.
Dust off your shoulder, Drew.
Dust off your shoulder, okay. A little bit of Jay-Z. Is that what you want me to do?
Yep. Jigga.
Did you think you did? I know, dirt, dust, it's close enough. I mean, the fact I knew...
The fact that Drew made that connection, guys.
Yeah, fact that I knew a rap reference is really, in and of itself, the miracle.
Charlie, drop that beat.
Yeah. Anyways, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Mr. Lube Winnipeg Jets game day, the Jets and the Predators tonight. A game you can hear live, of course, on TSN Radio 1290. That was Patrick Laine scoring an even strength 5-on-5 goal, something that is very rare for the Winnipeg Jets forward as of late. 4 even strength goals for Patrick Laine in his last 50 games played. You know, we've talked about his goal scoring struggles really since the end of November, when of course he went on that crazy streak. But since then, it's been a bit of a barren wasteland for Patrick Laine as it comes to goal scoring. He hasn't scored in his last 10 games. He's got 4 goals in his last 28. He only has goals in 18 of the Jets' 73 games this season. You know, I guess the question right now is, how do the Jets snap Patrick Laine out of this current goal scoring drought that he's in?
Yeah, it's the question that you have to think that Paul Maurice and the coaching staff is discussing quite a bit. They have other things on their mind, but when you talk about no goals in the last 11 games, you just said it, Drew, 4 goals in his last 28 games. That's just shocking, considering that he had, 18 in November?
Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned that's really when the goal scoring started to dry up, right? Late November, early December, and then it was actually the last time, not this past time, but 2 games ago when the Jets were in Vegas, when Laine snapped that goal scoring drought. It looked like, okay, Laine is back, right? And then he scored 4 goals in those 3 games.
Mm-hmm.
And then you thought, okay, you know, Laine's back, like I said. But really, he isn't back, because he still does not look like the same player that we saw in the first couple of months of the season. He really isn't. And his overall game has been better, I believe. And I'm not the only one on that top line with Scheifele and Wheeler. I mean, we've talked about it. We talked about it last week. I mean, you've seen the playmaking aspect of his game really shine. And sure, a lot of those assists have been on the power play. But when you're talking about his overall game, right, his 200-foot game, that cliche 200-foot game, he really has looked a lot better, you know, in the last, let's say, 10 to 15 games, I believe. And I realize that Laine is the type of player that you expect to score a lot of goals. I mean, that's what he does. That's his number one skill, right? Mm-hmm. But that's not all that hockey is, right? But when you're talking about Laine and his goal scoring, it's really hard to believe that this goal scoring drought continues playing with Scheifele and Wheeler. Because if you're not going to be scoring goals playing with the two best players on the Jets' best center and the Jets' best playmaker, I mean, who is going to bring out the sniper element of your game? I mean, is it going to be Kevin Hayes? I believe that the second line should be Laine, Ehlers, and Hayes, personally. Mm-hmm. And you saw that a little bit on the road trip.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Connor has been the most effective up with Scheifele and Wheeler. So I wouldn't be surprised here, guys, down the stretch, these last set of games.
I would expect it even this morning the game
which
day
is
skates.
In about 8 minutes.
Right, because last year it was Stastny, Laine, Ehlers, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, you basically substitute Hayes for Stastny. Mm-hmm. We know that Hayes is a guy that can distribute the puck and get it to Laine. And also Ehlers has the ability to get the puck to Laine. So it's really hard to understand, and you always have to look at the shot attempts and the shots. And if you look at the last, you know, just looking at the last road trip and the last handful of games at home, the game against San Jose and the game against Boston, Line A was excellent. But you look at the shots, like one shot a game, two shots a game. Yes, he's getting some shot attempts, especially in the power play, but he's just not getting himself in those dangerous scoring positions, right? So that's what I always look at. When Line A is the most effective, he's shooting the puck from those high danger areas, not just on the power play, mm-hmm. but at even strength. He's finding his way between to get himself dots. Exactly between the faceoff circles. He's finding a way to get there. And you know that Scheifele and Wheeler or Hayes and Connor or Ehlers, whoever it is, they know where to get Line A the puck. Line A also has to, I think, for him to be really effective, he has to make space for himself, and he has to put himself in those positions to shoot the puck. It can't always be, you know, someone finding Line A in the slot area. He has to get there himself.
Well, that's my point, Ezzy, and you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290. We're discussing Patrick Line A and his recent goal-scoring struggles. Everybody knows where the predominance of goals come from in the NHL, and it comes from those high danger areas. That's why we always look at high danger chances and the high danger scoring attempts. And, you know, Patrick Laine certainly knows that, but he hasn't seemed to want to get to those areas. Is it a matter of desire, Dave? Is it a matter of, you know, he needs a better effort to get to those areas? I mean, we know where the goals come from. He knows where the goals come from. Why isn't he getting to those areas like he was in November when he was on that crazy streak? We remember a lot of those goals would come. You'd just be right where you need to be. The puck would somehow get onto his stick, and he'd be able to wire that incredible shot past an unsuspecting goaltender.
Yeah, I mean, as he said, Drew, that's the $400 million question. I mean, with Patrick Laine,
I don't think he's getting Mike Trout money, Dave, but
fine, maybe not quite to that degree. But look, I mean, if you look at his shooting percentage this season, it's well down for what he's been traditionally at. And, you know, last year he was 18.3%, and this year he's at 12.7%. For Patrick Laine, that's a pretty big, you know.
No, the 12% is still, you know, 18% is
high.
Is high for anybody.
Sure. The league average, I think, is in the 13.
Maybe somewhere
maybe
in that
11.
Vicinity.
11 yeah. to 13.
But Patrick Laine, you would say, okay.
But he's not a league average shooter.
That's right. He's got one of the best shots in the league. So maybe an 18% shooting percentage is where a guy of his caliber
right.
should be.
Yeah, and that would be my philosophy. It's, you know, he had his first year, he had a 17.6 shooting percentage. Last year, 18.3. This year, 12.7. So clearly it's down. His shots is, you know, I agree with Ezzy. Lately, he hasn't had a lot. But overall, he's going to eclipse his career high in terms of the amount of shots he's taken in a season. So he's getting shots away. It's just the fact that they're just not going in the way we've traditionally seen. So is it that he's become predictable? Is it that teams have now accounted for where Patrick Laine is going to be? I mean, you know, generally that shot is pretty lethal. So, I mean, you would think, you know, people know where Alexander Ovechkin is going to be. It's not like it's a secret where Alexander Ovechkin is going to be, yet he still manages to score those goals. So I don't know if it's the velocity of his shots has decreased. I don't know what's going on.
I think
on.
It's the quantity. Like if, and I went back and looked. I didn't look back in, you know, to previous seasons, but just this year. If you look at games in which he scores, mm-hmm. four shots, five shots, right. six shots, seven shots, one shot, two shot a game, is just not going to get the job done. And a lot of those shots come on the power play.
And the question is he deferring too much?
He's got to shoot the puck more. And I mean, obviously he knows that.
I mean, four goals in his last 50 games at even strength.
Right.
That's below replacement value of an NHL player.
Yes, it is.
I mean, you know, the power play numbers sugarcoat everything.
Right.
But four even strength goals in his last 50 games? I mean, I'll be blunt, that's terrible.
Right. So then the question is he currently, as he said, is he with the line mates that are going to get him going? And clearly, you know,
I think they've got him going, Dave. Sorry to cut you off, yeah. but I really think that being on that top line with Scheifele Wheeler, it really has kind of put a bit of an urgency in his game. And I think you've seen that on the forecheck, and he started to get his hands dirty a little bit.
I think when it started, when he first went there, it did sort of jolt his game,
right.
and it improved. Now, I think we've seen some regression since then as maybe
yes.
he becomes more comfortable on that line. So, you know, if comfort breeds complacency, that could be maybe why you jolt him again and you move him down to that second line. And maybe he finds some chemistry with Kevin Hayes and with Nikolaj Ehlers, like you guys said, like he did with Stastny and Ehlers last season after the trade deadline. I mean, right now he seems... No, is it... I mean, I tend to believe that maybe to some degree he saves his best games for the most meaningful games. to some extent, I think that he's a little bit bored playing those games against the Anaheims and the LAs. And maybe that's a sign
if Line is bored at this point in the season, that's a huge issue. I don't know if he is, though, Drew, but if he is, that's a major issue.
Yeah.
Because this is crunch time.
It's crunch time.
There's eight games left in the season.
I know. But, I mean, if he looks bored and, you know, out of sorts tonight against the Predators on home ice on Saturday night when you can clinch a playoff spot, that's a huge red flag to me. If he looks like he did on this past road trip. Now, I wouldn't expect that. I mean, I think he's going to be a more engaged version of himself tonight.
Well, he could score a hat trick tonight. I mean, he has the ability. He scored 5 goals earlier in the season. I mean, he is one of the most elite goal scorers in the game. What about the fact that he's minus 21 on the season?
Well, I mean...
And I realize a lot of people don't like that statistic. I still do think there is, you know, some validity to that statistic. I mean, minus 21.
It's hard to sugarcoat his...
Wow.
All of his
that's,
numbers...
That's minus 21 on a first place team.
Yeah, all of his numbers are bad. I mean, you know, for Patrick Laine, the number of goals that he's had, I mean, that's good for most NHLers. It's great for most NHLers.
But he's created an expectation, and that's the problem, right? So, well, not a problem, but that's just the reality. So, I mean, you have a guy who had 70 points last year, 44 goals, 26 assists, and now he's at 48. You know, I mean, obviously there's still 8 games to go, but I mean, for Patrick Laine, you know, you're creating a type of expectation and when you're not meeting those expectations, I mean, the irony is, you know, we talk about what kind of money is he going to make? Is he going to be a $10 million player? Well, you got to earn those $10 million. You aren't just giving them.
If anything, he's saving the Jets money for next season, his contract extension by his play this season. So maybe that's the silver lining and the Jets still are a first place team. But, you know, this version of Patrick Laine this season has been immensely disappointing, I would suggest. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We, of course, want to hear from you. You can do so via Twitter at Illegal Curve, and you can also do so via text message. Send your text to 1299. Standard messaging rates do apply. We do have a texter coming in who's saying a lot of doesn't really think that Patrick Laine is putting out the energy. He's using the lazy word when it comes to Patrick Laine's performance. Do you agree? Disagree? We want to hear from you. Send your text to 1290 and give us your tweets at Illegal Curve. When we come back, we'll be joined by Ted Wyman of the Winnipeg Sun for more Jets talk. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Mr. Lube Winnipeg Jets Game Day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Saturday morning, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290. We're part of Mr. Lube Winnipeg Jets Game Day. Getting a lot of feedback coming in via Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can also send your text messages to 1290.90. Standard messaging rates do apply. We will read some of those tweets and texts on air throughout the program. This segment of the show brought to you by our friends at Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Bernstein's is proudly family-owned and operated and has been serving quality home-style food since 1985. For a hot, fresh breakfast starting at 6:30 a.m. on weekdays and all day long anytime, visit Bernstein's in the Cordon Village Mall. That's the corner of Cordon and Lanark. Tell them that Illegal Curve sent you. We are pleased to welcome to the program our very good friend from the Winnipeg Sun, Ted Wyman, joins us. Teddy, good morning. How are you? Thank you, Teddy, for joining us. You're back from the road trip. You were with the Jets as they made their sojourn through California and Nevada. Obviously, 2-1 on the road trip. The wins against the bottom-feeding Kings and Ducks. The shellacking at the hands of the Golden Knights. I guess, sort of, you know, if you could summarize your thoughts on the Jets' 3-game road trip and what your sort of takeaway on it was.
Well, it was interesting because, obviously, those first 2 games of the road trip, they played a style that they were really hoping to play, a very grinding style. They had also played that way against Calgary. They played that way somewhat against Boston. They really liked to be playing that shutdown defensive style, and it was working for them, and they won 4 games in a row. You go into Vegas, though, and, you know, whatever you want to say, it is a back-to-back. It is harder to come out in those games and have the legs, and obviously Vegas was skating much, much better than the Jets, and it just wasn't ever close. And there's no way that the Jets could play a grinder there because they were down so quickly, which is something that's happened a lot against Vegas. If you go back to the playoffs, they didn't ever really carry many leads in those games. So you really, the only way you can read it is that they went 2-1, which isn't bad, which is what Blake Wheeler talked about. And you have to look at it and say, playing Vegas, again, that is an extremely good hockey team and very tough to beat. And if the Jets aren't at their absolute best, they're not going to get very far against a team like that.
Teddy, morning skate is underway, and Munsey just tweeted out the lines. It looks like Nikolai Ehlers is back on that top line with Scheifele and Wheeler, and that means that Kyle Connor is going to be on the left side with Kevin Hayes obviously centering that second line, with Lion A moving to the right side. Does that make sense, considering that Lion A really didn't have a lot of success on that top line on this past road trip?
I think it makes sense. I thought I saw it coming just in the words of Paul Maurice even earlier this week. He mentioned that he thought Lion A was playing his best hockey overall, including defensively. I thought he actually was pretty good in the game in L.A., especially defensively. But he is not producing at all, and Paul Maurice recognized that. He basically said, we're not trying to turn him into a grinder, and we want him to, you know, we need to figure out a way to get him to be more productive, because that's where he earns his money. And lately it just hasn't happened, so I wasn't surprised to see a shakeup there. And, you know, well, you're just coming off a 5-0 loss. Why would you go with the exact same lineup? I don't think that makes a ton of sense. So we'll see how he can do. I didn't really think Hayes between Connor and Ehlers was all that productive either. It was decent. But, you know, maybe this look is a little different. I'm a little surprised that it's Ehlers up on the top line and not Connor. I kind of thought that was maybe the optimum look for the top line with Wheeler, Scheifele, and Connor. But we could see that yet down the road.
Now, Ted, I'm not going to ask you to predict what's happening with Laurent Brossoit, because we won't find out until after skate comes to an end. But if on the assumption that Eric Comrie is around for a while over the next week, do you see the setting up that he actually is going to get into a game, or do you think that Coach Maurice is just going to roll Connor Hellebuyck?
Well, if I'm not mistaken, there's still a back-to-back left in here, isn't there?
No.
So there's not?
I don't know. They play Saturday, Monday, Thursday, Saturday.
Yeah.
Okay. So they, you know, I mean, you don't have to play them, but it really depends, guys. I mean, obviously, if the team has clinched a playoff spot, which they could do very soon, and if they don't, and then maybe they clinch first place a little with a few games left, you certainly could see Eric Comrie, and why wouldn't you? But I think Connor Hellebuyck would relish having the load down the road, you know, the way the rest of the season here, because he loves to play a lot. He likes to be in that rhythm. He especially likes to be in that every second day rhythm. And so if there's going to be, you know, the coach might want to see a little bit more rest for him before a big playoff run. But Connor Hellebuyck's been saying all season long that what he really wants is to peak for the playoffs, to be absolutely at his best at that point. And if you get him in a rhythm just before that, then that's the best way to do it. And I thought one of his best games of the season might have been in Anaheim the other night when he got the shutout. He just looked so calm and so good in that game. And, you know, I thought he made it look kind of easy, but he made more tough saves than people might realize. So he doesn't have the greatest numbers this year, that's for sure. But he certainly is, I think, looking stronger for the most part. And as it gets closer to the playoffs, that's the way you want it.
And Ted, just to correct Dave, because I always try to make Dave look good. There's no back-to-back on this homestand, but there is a back-to-back April 1st and 2nd on the road between Chicago and Minnesota. So I guess that's what you were getting to if Eric Comrie is still up with the Jets for that last road trip of the season. I guess he would, in theory, get one of those back-to-back games, unless Laurent Brossoit, of course, is back in the lineup, and then he would get one of those games.
Yeah, that seems likely to me for sure.
Ted Wyman is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Ted is, of course, with the Winnipeg Sun. You're listening to Winister Lube Winnipeg Jets Game Day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290. Teddy, you know, obviously Josh Morrissey and Dustin Byfuglien still both out of the Jets lineup. Not, you know, anything specific in terms of an ETA, despite the fact that I guess Paul Maurice reported that they were both, that Byfuglien was back on the ice and Morrissey was close to getting back on the ice. How important is it for these guys to get some regular season games in before the playoffs start? Or do you think that they can sort of, obviously maybe not be at peak performance if they were to return just for the playoffs, but that would still be tolerable for the Jets?
I think it would be tolerable. If you can get them both back for the playoffs, you're going to be thrilled. I mean, we were talking about it the other day and thinking, boy, there's only nine games left before we even said this. And they're not skating. I mean, Buff is skating now, but he's not on the ice. He's not wearing a jersey. We'll have to see if that changes soon. But it's getting close to the end of the season here, and until you see some hard facts that they're really coming closer to a return, it has to be a concern that they might not get back for the regular season. So I think they'll take anything they can get with those guys, because that really is going to be a huge difference. I mean, there's not many teams in the league who are going to add two of their top three defensemen for the playoffs. That's a pretty huge addition. And the Jets, I think, have done pretty well filling those holes with players who are not anywhere near the same caliber as those two. And so if they can get them back, if you could get them for a couple of games before, obviously that would be ideal, because you'd sure love to see them get a little chance to get their legs under them and be ready at top speed when the playoffs start. But you're going to take whatever you can get, because those guys are big-time Incott players.
Ted, it looks like, based on morning line rushes, that Matt Hendricks is going to be back in the lineup for Paul Maurice, and Jack Roslovic is going to come out. And Roslovic's goal-scoring struggles have been well-documented. He hasn't scored a goal since early February. Oddly enough, it was a hat-trick against the Anaheim Ducks in that game that the Jets won, I think it was 9-3, if I'm not mistaken, 8-3, 9-3, 10-3. There were a lot of goals. But, I mean, what do you make of how Paul Maurice is using Jack Roslovic? Because I think you'd agree that when the playoffs start, whoever the Jets play in the first round, I think you'd expect Jack Roslovic to be in the starting lineup over Hendricks.
Well, this is a different move today than the one when he put Hendricks in against L.A. on Monday. Because against L.A., you're playing the worst team in the Western Conference. It's a game you're supposed to win. You're just looking to get Hendricks in and get him some action before the season runs out. And you're looking for a guy who's maybe plays a little bit of a heavier game, obviously, in that situation. But this is different. Now you're playing Nashville in a game that has huge playoff implications, has first place implications, and it's not a must-win game, but it's a big, big game for the Winnipeg Jets and the Nashville Predators. And clearly he's putting Matt Hendricks in to bring a little more toughness and grit into the lineup, because that's what Nashville went and loaded up a bit in bringing in Brian Boyle and Wayne Simmonds, and got bigger. And they're a little bit stronger along the walls. And clearly what you're going to want is to have a guy like Matt Hendricks in there who can handle that a bit. Also, the last few games have been pretty physical in terms of not only the big hitting, which I think Vegas certainly showed the Jets, pushed the Jets around a bit, but also in the Anaheim game, there was a lot of pushing and shoving, and a couple of times things came to fisticuffs. So, you know, maybe having a guy like Hendricks in there can help in that area as well. But obviously you're giving up a lot in terms of team speed and scoring touch when you don't have Jack Roslovic out there. But you can't really argue that Roslovic's been playing particularly well lately. He certainly hasn't done much.
Well, Ted, speaking of a guy who's had to step up in the absence of other players, you know, Josh Morrissey, you know, Byfuglien, yeah, Jacob Trouba now with a career year in terms of points, you know, his minutes obviously per game were way up. What have your thoughts been of Jacob Trouba's season so far, and also obviously specifically what he's been able to do with those guys out?
I thought he was the best player in the Jets in the Anaheim game, other than maybe Connor Hellebuck. I thought he was really good, very, very solid moving the puck, very solid physically. And I think he chipped in a couple of assists. He just is really having a very consistent season. And you have to be somewhat impressed by that, in that he's had to do it lately without his regular partner, Morrissey, who I think makes any defense partner better, because he's just so solid and so consistent. Trouba has lately had Nathan Boileau, he's had Joe Morrow. He's had different guys on his left side who just aren't of the same quality as Josh Morrissey, and he's still holding up there, putting in pretty big minutes and being a big contributor. So he's really had a great season for the Jets. There's no question about it. Career year in terms of points, like you say, it doesn't hurt that he's playing those extra minutes on the power play, et cetera. But, you know, I think his role is better with the Jets as a guy who's on a shutdown pairing. Not quite so much of the power play time. That's where they're really going to like to have Byfuglien back, because that power play just hasn't looked as good.
Ted Wyman covers the Winnipeg Jets for the Winnipeg Sun. The Jets and the Preds in action later on tonight. Teddy, appreciate your time. Thanks for joining us.
Always a pleasure, fellas. Have a great day.
You too, Ted. Thanks very much. When we come back, much more from the Winnipeg Jets game day skate. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Mr. Lube, Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Hayes at the empty net and blocked by Forsberg. Center for Hayes. Scores! Wheeler with some good work.
Drama tonight, Dennis.
Oh, baby.
Game is advertised.
I'm just surprised that we don't have a whiteout going because everything about this game has a playoff feel to it here.
That was from about 3 weeks ago, the last time the Jets and the Predators met at Bell MTS Place. They'll do battle again tonight with first place in the Central Division on the line.
I just want to hear Dennis say bang, bang.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290 as part of Mr. Lube Winnipeg Jets Game Day. This segment of the show is brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center. Dr. Rikus and his team provide modern and comprehensive dental care for the whole family. To make an appointment today, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com.
How did Kentucky do, by the way, in their first game?
Kentucky defeated Abilene Christian quite handily as a 2 versus a number 15 seed. They play Wofford at a 1:40 Central time this afternoon. That's going to be a great game, going to be reminiscent of the Kentucky-Wichita State battles from a few years ago, which were sort of that mid-major that had a lot of hype around it against Kentucky. Of course, the bluest of the blue bloods. I'm quite looking forward to it.
Kentucky's the number one seed,
number two
right?
seed. Number two okay. seed in the Midwest.
So who's number one?
Number one overall is Duke.
Right.
The other number ones are Gonzaga, Virginia, and North
Carolina.
That's my team.
Gonzaga.
Gonzaga's your team?
Just
because
I like to say it. It's just fun to say.
Yeah, no, Kentucky's got it's going to be a very difficult game against Wofford. Wofford shoots the three very well.
Like, where is Wofford? I have no idea where that is.
I believe Wofford is in North Carolina, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay. So nearby?
Nearby to
like
what?
Kentucky.
Well, I mean, Kentucky and North Carolina aren't that close to each other. But
really,
I mean,
don't they touch geographically?
No, they do not touch geographically.
They're pretty close.
I mean, they're about 8 hours away from each other by driving.
Really? I thought they were closer than that.
Well,
I've only been to Kentucky once, and I was so drunk I had no idea where I was.
And
that was your wedding back in 2012. So,
which we remind
people.
I
felt like I was in the deep south, but actually Kentucky's not that deep.
Not that deep. Mid-south is
it's mid-south.
Just south of Ohio.
Yeah.
We remind people that.
It's not like Alabama.
As he came to my wedding with, he had about 3 nights worth of events. He brought one shirt to the wedding.
No, that's not true.
You brought one dress shirt to the wedding. You spilled on it.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
I had one dress shirt,
but I had other shirts. I had T-shirts.
You had T-shirts, which would not be
appropriate
for a wedding.
They were all stained with mustard and ketchup. But.
And you stained your one dress shirt on the first night and then had to go to a...
Do you remember...
Was it a Joseph A. Bank you had to go to?
It was a Joseph A. Bank. And let me tell you, they put out a really nice dress shirt.
You're still wearing that dress shirt, I'm sure, 7 years later. Anyways, welcome back to the program.
I think the stain was like, I forget what the meal was. It was like tartar sauce or something, but I got tartar sauce all over the shirt and I couldn't get it out, even with one of those Tide-to-go pens.
So
I had to go to Joseph A. Bank. Shout out to those fine folks in Kentucky.
Anyways, welcome
back.
Got
myself a new dress shirt.
and you made it to my wedding, and we thank you for your attendance. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. The Winnipeg Jets are in the midst of their game day skate, and there's a lot of line shuffling as we speculated on that earlier in the program. So we might as well go through the lines to make sure everybody is up to date on what the Jets are
doing. Paulie Margarita's back. He's making a margarita with all those line blenders.
Yes, exactly, with all the line blender. Shifley and Wheeler, so they stay together. Nikolai Ehlers joins them on the left side of that line. The second line features Kyle Connor, Kevin Hayes, and on the right side, Patrick Laine. Little, Lowry, and Tanev stay the same. Perreault, Kopp, and Matt Hendricks into the lineup for Jack Roslovic. We don't know if that is an injury situation or if that is a situation like we saw on Monday against the LA Kings, where the coaches made that decision to add a little bit of more grit to the lineup in place of Jack Roslovic. On defense, Joe Morrow out of the lineup, Nathan Beaulieu back in the lineup alongside Jacob Trouba.
Yep.
Sherratt and Nikku, they've been together for, recently a fair bit, and Kulikov and Myers, who've been together as well. Connor Hellebuyck will get the start in goal for the Winnipeg Jets as expected.
Yep.
Your thoughts on the swapping of the Jets that's calling the top six and the addition of Matt Hendricks into the lineup, at least right now?
Yeah, Drew, obviously Paul Maurice with these line combinations is trying to get the offense going. I mean, the Jets obviously were shut out against Vegas, but you go back to the game against Calgary. I mean, that wasn't exactly a high-scoring game. That was 2-1, and they've scored 8 goals combined in their last 4 games. So the Jets aren't exactly, you know, producing at that high level that we're expecting offensively. They're playing very well defensively. And, you know, that was one thing that we didn't really touch on that much in the first segment before we had Ted Wyman on, and obviously the second segment as well. But when we were talking about, you know, that road trip, it was a pretty underwhelming road trip, even though they were 2-1. And what I mean by that is the game against LA, yeah, the Jets won, but I thought they didn't really win in a commanding fashion, even though they were clearly the better team. But certainly against the Ducks, I mean, I'm pretty sure, you know, you could find 12-year-old hockey teams that could beat that Ducks team right now the way they're playing, but they just they weren't, I think, clicking on all cylinders, right? We know when the Jets are clicking on all cylinders, they score 4 or 5 goals a game most times, but I think by moving Ehlers onto that top line, you're definitely trying to get that top line going in addition to getting the second line going. Because I actually think Kevin Hayes has been very solid on that second line. And when you have Patrick Laine on the right side, you know that he prefers to be on the left side. But we know that Connor and Laine have had a lot of success together on the wings on that second line. Even before that, guys, before the trade deadline, when Brian Little was centering Connor and Laine, we know that Connor can drive a line, and I thought Connor was the Jets' best forward against Vegas. You guys might disagree with that, but I think, you know, Connor has just been so consistent all year long. But you can clearly see that that's what Paul Maurice is doing here. Patty Laine wasn't very good on that road trip, and when you look at, you know, the Jets' forwards as a totality, I mean, I think you could say that with the exception of the third line, I mean, you could have some issues with all three of your quote unquote scoring lines, and that includes the fourth line. Because when Jack Roslovic is on your fourth line, that line has.
And Matty Perreault.
Well, exactly, but Matty Perreault's like, he's still on the line. That's what I mean. When you put Hendricks on the line, you obviously, it's not as dangerous offensively. But when you don't have that line really clicking and they're only playing 7-8 minutes a game, how effective can they be? And they weren't effective on that road trip, I didn't think. So I can understand why Hendricks is going into the lineup. I don't think Hendricks is necessarily going to be a starting forward for the Jets come playoff time. But yeah, you're going up against the Predators. It's going to be nasty tonight, guys. I mean, these two teams, we've seen two suspensions come out of these games this year, right? Ryan Johansson earlier this season, and then Adam Lowry was suspended for clipping Philip Forsberg. So these games have been chippy, and it should be a fantastic game tonight. But that's why Hendricks is in there
to match some of the grit that
sure
that, that
and he's
Nashville's
not gonna, he's
gonna
not gonna play
bring
more than, you know, 10 minutes. I mean, he's not gonna you have him in there for exactly the reasons that everybody knows. He's a veteran that, you know, he's going to be smart in his own zone. You know, if he chips in a goal, that's just bonus. But he's in there just to make sure.
Chips in any offense.
Sure, he's there to just make sure that, you know, nothing gets out of control.
What do you think about, assuming it's not injury-related, Dave, do you agree with the move? Or the moves, I guess, that Paul Maurice has made with the line blender today?
Well, I mean, I do like the idea of putting Laine with Kevin Hayes. I like that idea because I think that, you know, a lot of people, when they saw that the Jets were thinking of acquiring him, were seeing him as a player that is going to be opting. I think the problem with Laine on that top line is I think he defaults too often to Blake Wheeler and too often to Blake Wheeler and Mark Scheifele. And I think with Kevin Hayes, Kyle Connor can be a shooter, obviously, but I think with those guys, I think he's going to be shooting a little more often. He won't be facing the same level of competition, obviously.
You're saying there's no overwhelming alpha male on that second line right now that Laine would be intimidated to play with, but
alpha male. What is this, like a first year psychology class?
Well, I don't know. It could be. I suppose if somebody wants to take it as a first year psychology class.
I mean, you've
class.
Got 3 beta males here, so I don't even know why we're talking about that.
4. Sean is here too. Come on. So, no, but I think that I think Hayes will be the distributor that Laine needs, and I think Hayes will get him the puck. So I like the move. I mean, Hendricks is whatever. It's like when you put a quarter horse beside a thoroughbred. You know, they need to be calmed down, and so you have the quarter horse walking beside the thoroughbreds. You know, I mean, it seems to be like, look, they've been warming him up. They use him in warm up consistently, and it's interesting, right? Like, you, for how many games do we see Matt Hendricks' dress for the warm-up.
Yeah. There was
no
skate.
There was no attention. I mean, Paul Maurice always kind of alludes to the potential of, you know, you never know what's going to happen. But conventional wisdom thought it was going to be Paul Lindholm getting those into the games if they needed the Jets ended up needing an extra forward, not Matt Hendricks.
Right.
Now, of course, Matt Hendricks got into the game, and they said, well, we need him just to get it. You know, he's healthy now. We wanted to get him some action, obviously. But
yeah, they don't seem to have the same issues with Bogdan Kiselevich about getting him the action.
Well, yeah, I thought perhaps that would have given him an opportunity that last game. But regardless, I don't make the coaching decisions. And the fact is that I like the taking Laine off that top line, because while you could say his overall game has improved, there's still things that need to you know, he needs to be doing. And I think that's the scoring. And I think with Kevin Hayes, he's more likely to do that.
With all of this horse talk, I just hope before the playoffs start, the Jets are able to get their big Clydesdale back.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We apologize for that. You're on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290. We're part of Mr. Lube, Winnipeg Jets game day.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. The podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN Radio 1290. We're part of Mr. Lube, Winnipeg Jets game day. The Jets and the Preds tonight at Bell MTS Place, a game you can hear live on TSN 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in the studio by Ezra Ginsberg and Dave Minuke. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. We want to hear from you. We'll get back to your tweets throughout the show. And of course, you can also reach us in studio via text. Send your text to 1290.90. Standard messaging rates do apply. We'll get to your text as well. And our website has got the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is illegalcurve.com. We're pleased to welcome back to the program Nashville Predators analyst Chris Mason. Chris, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Our pleasure, Chris. Obviously going to be an important tilt tonight at Bell MTS Place between the Jets and the Preds. The Preds 2 points behind the Jets, looking to equalize atop the Central Division. Last time these two teams played at the beginning of the month, it was a pretty heated atmosphere. I would imagine 3 weeks later, 3 weeks closer to the start of the playoffs, you'd be anticipating a similar playoff-style atmosphere tonight.
Oh, I think so. It has to be. I mean, every time these two teams get together now, I think it's really turned into, you know, a focal rivalry in the Central Division just because of where these teams are at right now in their development and, you know, competing for the Central Division. For me, this is the, you know, you hear this term thrown around loosely a lot at this point of the year, but this is for the Predators, at least, the biggest game of the year. They have to win this one if they want any chance of winning the Central Division. If not, it's going to be tough. The Jets have a game in hand, and they've got the lead. So this is, to me, this is the game right here.
And Chris, we hear a lot about how much these two teams don't like each other. Obviously, you know, the Jets beat the Predators last year in the second round in that epic seven-game series. And, you know, we've already had a couple of suspensions in the games between these two teams. Adam Lowry suspended for that high stick on Philip Forsberg, and then Ryan Johansson was suspended for a couple of games earlier in the season. But do you think that's overblown at all, or do these teams hate each other just as much as we think they do?
I think they hate each other. I think it's, I think it's turned into an incredible rivalry just because each team has what the other wants. They want that first team, and they know that they have to go through each other if they want to, you know, have success in the playoffs and obviously get to the Western Conference Finals or win a Stanley Cup. So I think that just every game you have, you watch the games. These are two top defensive clubs in the NHL, and every time they get together, it's penalties galore. It's a 5-4 hockey game. And I think that they legitimately do not like each other. I think they love the competition and all that kind of stuff, but I legitimately think that these two teams don't like each other very much.
You know, Chris, I was reading a quote in the Tennessean the other day from Coach Laviolette talking about Austin Watson. He said he was one of our top players in the playoffs last year. What has it meant to the team getting him back to the lineup? Not necessarily playing yet, obviously, but just the idea of him being back around the guys. What has that meant for this team?
I think it's meant a lot. I really, you know, I like how they handle the situation. It's, you know, it's never tough when you get into these kind of substance abuse situations, but they've had a history of doing that with players before where they've helped, you know, Jordan Tutu was one that went through the program and came out successful. And I think at the end of the day, that's, you know, first and foremost where their focus was. But now getting him back at this point means that he went through a successful stint there and things are good, and they're going to take it day by day. But to have a guy like that was, you know, he's got that physical presence, and he was scoring some goals. So I think it's, I don't know exactly when or where he's going to fit in, but at some point, I know they'll, I'm guessing they'll get him in some games, and he's going to be an option for the club moving down, which is a good thing, especially when you're, you know, you talk about having to play a team like Winnipeg that's really big and physical, and once, you know, they get, you know, Buff back and all that, it really poses a different challenge. So it's good that he's, Watson's back and he's doing well, and I don't know exactly when he's going to be inserted in the lineup or what it is. I think it's more of a day-to-day kind of thing.
Chris Mason is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Mr. Lube Winnipeg Jets game day. The Jets and the Predators tonight, a game you can hear live on TSN Radio 1290. Chris, you know, it's been 10 games since that Wayne Simmonds has played as a member of the Predators since being acquired at the deadline from the Philadelphia Flyers. He's only got 2 points in those 10 games. How would you evaluate his performance as a member of the Predators so far?
I think he's been great. I think, again, they made a couple trades, I think, you know, in foreshadowing the matchup between, you know, you always know who you have to go through to get to the end game in playoffs. So Winnipeg's that team. That's a big physical team. And I think last year in the playoffs, it was a great series, but it went 7 games. And I think the Jets had the edge because they were the bigger team, and they just wore down the Predators, and they didn't really have an answer per se. And I think Wayne Simmonds, Brian Boyle, you know, Austin Watson are kind of players that they look at that, you know, could go toe-to-toe with some of the bigger guys on Winnipeg. But with, I think Wayne Simmonds has been great. He goes to the net. He brings a different element. Teams play a little bit differently against the Predators now with those two guys in the lineup. You mentioned the numbers. He's a guy that's going to be a net front guy. So he goes and does his thing. He goes, gets the pucks. He retrieves them in the corners, and he goes to the front of the net, and then he battles. And I think the more of the issue is, they haven't been able to get as many pucks, you know, to his area of the ice there to give him more success. But he scored two games ago, and it was a big goal. So he got the first one out of the way, so it'll be interesting to see how it goes down the stretch for him.
Chris, I'm not sure if Pekka Rinne is going to get the start tonight for the Predators against the Jets, but, you know, you talk about last year's second-round playoff matchup between these two teams, and obviously, you know, Pekka Rinne would tell you himself that, you know, he had a couple of games where he would have liked to have a better performance. But you look at the way he's playing right now, and he had the shutout against the Toronto Maple Leafs. And then even though the Preds lost in the shootout to the Pittsburgh Penguins, you know, stopped 32 of 33 shots. And he also had, you know, a really nice game against the LA Kings. He picked up the win in that game. And the way he's playing right now, is that what you want to see? I mean, I guess that's an obvious question, but the way Rinne is playing leading up to the playoffs with just 2 weeks left in the regular season, could you say that he's had a bit of an underrated season for the Predators? I guess when you win the Vezina Trophy, when you play like this, I mean, I guess that's just what people come to expect.
Yeah, I think, you know, he's an older guy, right? So he's like 35, and I think people start looking at waiting for your downfall of your career. And like you said, he won the Vezina, had a good race there with Hellebuck last year, and it's all about timing with these guys, and it's much. Just the parallels between the Jets and the Predators are just. It's kind of funny because I think before they met, they were both really struggling, kind of hovering around, you know, 500 in their last 10 games or so, and you know, obviously it was a great game. I thought both teams played really well here the last time we're at the MTS Bell Center, and Winnipeg ended up winning. But I think that really kickstarted both teams into playing well, and Pekka as well has picked up his game since. And for me, it's all about the timing. I feel like the team was up and down before that. Pekka was a little bit the same, up and down, you know, good game, bad game type of thing. But now he's dialed in, and that's what the good players in this league can do is when it's time to turn it up, they can turn it up. And he's one of those guys that he can do that. You know, he's so mentally tough and strong, and he's been through everything in this league basically, and he's always responded. And like you said, he had a tough series. I think, you know, both goalies did in a way. It was kind of a weird series in that regard, but you know, he's picking it up right now, and that's exactly what you want to see. And it's not just the numbers, but just the way you see him and the confidence. I'm guessing he'll go tonight. I'm not 100% sure either, but should be a good battle. I'm sure Hellebuck's obviously going too, with Brossoit out. You know, so it should be a good one.
Chris, earlier in the week, Kyle Turris was a healthy scratch for two games for the Predators. He's in the first year of a six-year deal. Are you sensing a lot of frustration from him? He said that I don't think there's anything gained by being a healthy scratch, but and Coach Laviolette really didn't want to get into it. But what are you sensing from Kyle Turris when you see him day-to-day?
Well, I mean, you got to be – I don't know how many times he's been scratched in his career, especially later on. You know, he's an older veteran guy. He's been a point producer for years in this league. So I think he must have been frustrated. You could sense that a little bit, but I think, you know, they're trying to get him going. You know, he was having a tough time, you know, really getting, you know, creating offense and being able to execute his game. So I think, you know, it sucks as an older veteran player to get healthy scratch. It does for anybody, but it's also a time where, you know, you can kind of sit back, reflect, get a little mad, get a little, you know, pissed off, I guess, and come back, and you don't have to prepare for a game. You know, at this point in the season, it's either you're playing a game or you're preparing for the game the next night. And that mental break does a lot. And since he's been back, like last game I thought was one of his best games that I've seen him play in a long time in terms of the engagement, the speed, the battle level, all those types of things. You know, he set up a couple of guys. He could have easily had about two or three assists. So I felt like it was, you know, looking back on it now, it was a good thing, you know, to happen. And just, you know, the player never wants to sit out, and you don't think it's a good thing. But in retrospect, the way he played, responded last game, I think the message got sent.
Last question for you, Chris. It's sort of everyone here in Winnipeg, and I don't know about Nashville, but I would imagine the same, that seem to think it's a foregone conclusion that the Jets and the Predators are going to meet in the second round of the playoffs. Yet you look at the Central Division standings and both the Jets and the Predators and really the Blues, you know, since their hot streak, you know, all the teams in the Central Division have sort of just been scuffling along to the finish line of this regular season. Do you think that the Jets and Preds are heads and shoulders above all the other teams in the Central Divisions, or do you think that it is more of a logjam than we saw, say, last year when the Jets and the Predators were the clear two best teams in the Central?
I think it's more of a logjam. I think there's no foregone conclusion. You look at like Dallas right now, if they get in and depending on where they finish in the wild card, they're playing really good hockey. And again, it's all about that timing. So they're a confident group right now. They're not giving up much in terms of goals against. Ben Bishop's had, I don't know, three shutouts in the last five games or whatever. So, you know, the Blues, probably one of the best teams in the league since January 1st. Mm-hmm. They're a team that can really lock it down. To me, it depends if they get the goaltending. I don't know if they stack up necessarily depth-wise against the Jets and the Predators, but if they can get if they can lock it down, which they have been, and they can get decent goaltending, I mean, I honestly think anyone's got a chance. It's not like the East where, you know, Tampa and Boston and a couple of those teams, I think, well, they have to play each other in the second round too, which is kind of unfortunate. But I think this is this conference, I think, is anyone's ball game. It just matters who gets hot and who plays well when playoffs start.
Chris, before we let you go, can we expect to see your 90s night gear tonight for the Jets Predators game, or did you leave that back in Nashville?
Yeah, I shaved the head. I grew it back for that night, and then I shaved it right after. But no, that was fun, man. We had a good time. I love when they do that stuff. I felt like an idiot, but you got to get into character and have fun with it.
There you go. It's still a game at the end of it all. We need that reminder every now and then, right? It's still for fun.
You're right.
Chris Mason is on the Nashville Predators broadcast team. Chris, appreciate your time. Thanks for joining us. Enjoy tonight's contest.
All right, thank you very much.
Take care, Chris. When we come back, more on the Jets, more on the Jets and the Preds. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Mr. Lube Winnipeg Jets Game Day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN 1290.ca.
Veteran move in that.
In the slot, shot, score! Ben Sherrod on the 4-on-4 gets his fifth of the year, and the Jets have jumped into a 3-0 lead.
You look at his last two games, 7 hits, 2 blocks. He's had 3 assists in his last 6, being a part of the offense at wise times. He chooses the right time to jump into the play. in one motion. He receives it and slings it past McElhenney.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live on TSN Radio 1290 as part of Mr. Lube Winnipeg Jets game day. That was Ben Chiarot scoring for the Winnipeg Jets back when they played and defeated the Carolina Hurricanes a couple weeks ago. This segment of the show brought to you by our good friends Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. We've been asking for your comments and feedback to some of the Jets' moves. We want them via Twitter at Illegal Curve, and of course via text message. Send your text to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. Coming up in about less than an hour's time, the Saturday We Call You edition of You Bet Your Jet. Send your text right now to send You Bet to 129090. Get your name and number entered into the draw. We might be calling you within the next hour for an opportunity to win $1,000 in our great You Bet Your Jet contest. Some comments that are coming in via Twitter. Greg Burnett says, move Perreault to line 2, Connor to line 1, put TLC back together in line A with Little and Roslovic. You can spark him playing against weaker players and piss him off at the same time. Of course, the Jets won't be able to do that tonight. Jack Roslovic not going to be in the lineup for the Jets. Matt Hendricks seems to draw in ahead. To Greg's point, Patrick Laine, when they did that earlier, they sort of dropped him down in the lineup. Didn't really work. Didn't get him any more motivated. Not sure it'll work this time. Of course, Laine moving to the right side to play with Kevin Hayes and Kyle Connor tonight against the Predators. Nikolai Ehlers back up to play with Scheifele and Wheeler. They had some success together earlier when they've performed. Some comments also coming in via text message. We'll get to those throughout the show. Ben Chiarot of the Winnipeg Jets, guys, he set career highs so far this year in goals. He's got 5. In assists with 15, points with 20. He's playing the most time on ice in his career. He's a pending UFA at season's end. So sort of a two-part question for Ben Chiarot. One, you know, how impressed have you been with his performance, given that nobody really expected him to have to log the minutes that he's had to log this season on the Jets' blue line? And two, has he now played himself out of the Jets' salary cap situation for next year? But by his performance this season, it seems likely he's going to get an increase on the $1.4 million he's making this season.
Yeah, well, let's first, I love that we're talking about Ben Chiarot. You know that I really like his game, and it's hard to believe, guys, that this is his fifth year with the Jets, right? It seems like, you know, he's maybe been on the Jets longer. And, you know, it's also kind of funny. I don't think this necessarily gets talked about enough, but he's only one of two players who was a Thrashers draft pick, right? Brian Little being the other one, right?
Dustin, so Bufflin was, yeah, with the Blackhawks, of course. But yeah, you're right.
Right.
Sorry.
Basically, no need to interrupt me.
I'm going to say technically, Peter Stoykovich. Also,
still playing with the
Moose. I meant players that are actively in the Jets roster.
Just trying to be accurate.
Dave's bringing in the full wholesome picture, the fulsome picture of everything to do with the Atlanta
Thrashers.
You're
right. Peter Stoykovich was a Thrashers draft pick, but for regular Jets, Little and Chiarot are the only Thrashers draft picks. But Chiarot has been a big part of this Jets team, and you mentioned the minutes he's playing. You know, he was playing big minutes with Buff in the lineup. I mean, he's a top four defenseman for this team. He's regularly playing 17, 18, 19 minutes. So yeah, sure, his numbers have at times gone up a little bit without Josh Morrissey in the lineup. Of course, that I think affects him a little bit more. But you know, Chiarot has been solid all year long. And you mentioned, Drew, you know, the career offensive numbers. To me, that's just icing on the cake, right? And I think Chiarot would tell you that. And he really does have an underrated offensive game. We know Chiarot has one of the hardest shots on the team with Buff, right? And
he's won the skills competition and passed for
right,
the Jets.
And it's not just the big slapper, because Chiarot is a very intelligent player, and I don't think he gets a lot of credit. I think a lot of times people kind of pigeonhole Chiarot as, you know, that kind of stay-at-home defensive defenseman, physical, and yes, he can lay the body. He's a big boy, and that's a big part of his game, but he is a good all-around defenseman. And I've said this before, but I think Chiarot and Tanev are the two most improved Jets. If you look at the last couple of years, Chiarot, I think he's playing the best hockey of his career, and we played that clip. You know, Kevin Sawyer has talked about this a lot. I mean, Chiarot plays probably a little bit more of a simple game, but he can jump up into the play and he can create offense. So when you're talking about, you know, his contract situation, I mean, he's one of the best bargains in the league at 1.2 or 1.3 million, whatever he's making. And yeah,
1.4.
he's gonna get a raise.
So to that point,
I mean,
Dave,
would we be surprised if he gets $2 million a year? And I think he deserves it on an AAV. He's going to get a little bit more money for sure. And, you know, I would have to think that the Jets are going to do everything in their power to sign him. I mean, I'm not sure. I mean, it depends, obviously, how much guys like Kyle Connor and Patrick Laine make. But if they have the ability to sign Sherratt for whatever it is, and again, this is something that I don't think Chevy is worrying about now.
No, it's an offseason.
He's going to worry about it in the offseason. But we know that Paul Maurice is a big fan, and the entire team. I mean, Sherratt has been, I think, right up there with Jacob Trouba as one of the most consistent defensemen for the Jets all year long. And I realize, you know, sometimes, like I said, you look at Sherratt and you say, okay, there's not a lot of flash to his game. We've maybe seen a little bit more flash this year, but you kind of look at Sherratt and you say, okay, you know, on a team like the Jets, he's the fourth or fifth best defenseman. Well, that's not a bad thing when you have Morrissey, Trouba, and Buff ahead of you, right? So I think a lot of times he is very underrated for what he can do. I mean, again, we're not talking about a Norris Trophy candidate here, but he's a very solid NHL defenseman, and I've always liked his game. You can go back to the last 5 years of listening to the show. I've always been a big Ben Sherratt guy, and I think this year, finally, people are starting to wake up and give him a little bit more credit for how good of a defenseman he is.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290 as part of Mr. Lube Winnipeg Jets Game Day, talking about the performance of Ben Sherratt this season. So, Dave, I ask you, and as you said that Sherratt is likely to get a raise, I would agree with that. Do you think the Jets are still, given their salary cap structure, and we've heard so much about the cap issues for the Jets going forward, do you think that he has sort of played himself out of the Jets budget for next season? Or given the sort of the dearth of left side defensemen in the Winnipeg Jets organization.
You say dearth or Fred Durst?
I said dearth.
Okay.
Does that, maybe give the Jets more motivation to maybe pay a little bit more than they would have necessarily expected to or wanted to keep Sherratt around?
I mean, it's you've got Tucker Pullman. Now he's a right side defenseman, and you don't know what's going to happen with Tyler Myers next season.
Mm-hmm.
So, and you've got Jacob Trouba, that's a big question mark. I mean, the reality is, Drew, it's very difficult to kind of figure it out because obviously there's so many question marks ahead of Ben Sherratt that are more important to me personally. I mean, Ben Sherratt's a good defenseman. I wouldn't go crazy over him. I think he's fine. I think what he does is he's been solid for the Jets when they've needed him. I think that's a good thing. But, you've got guys like Niku, obviously he's a right-side defenseman, and you've got Pullman, again, another right side defenseman.
So I'm saying, on the left side, I mean, the Logan Stanley, but Logan Stanley's not ready.
Logan Stanley's a couple of years away. So, I mean, yeah. I wouldn't be looking at Logan Stanley as a potential, savior for this team on the left side. No, there's no question that you've got a lack of that, in that position. So do you have to pay that premium? And again, it becomes a function of what are you doing with other guys? What are you doing with Jacob Trouba? Are you giving him more money? Are you re-signing Tyler Myers? Obviously, you don't want to be signing up to 5.5, but there's going to be some team that's going to offer Tyler Myers a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
So the reality is, you've already got Dmitry Kulikov, $4.3 million. You got Josh Morrissey at $3.15 million. So you've already paying out a lot of money, for your defense. I don't know where, because as Ezzie said, and he's not incorrect, you've got Kyle Connor, you've got Patrick Laine, you've got a lot of question marks. So while that's not something that's being decided right now, yeah, of course his play is definitely merited him an increase, and I think there's no question about it.
I
think he factors in after those other guys.
I think you would have to think that the Jets are going to do everything in their power to re-sign Sherratt because he's one of those players to me that has exceeded expectations this year.
Certainly, it'll be one of those underrated storylines to keep an eye on in the offseason. Of course, the Jets rely on Ben Sherratt heavily right now without Josh Morrissey in the lineup, without Dustin Byfuglien. So Ben Sherratt playing key minutes for a Jets team with aspirations to go deep into the Stanley Cup playoffs. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290. We're part of Mr. Lube Winnipeg Jets Game Day. And when we come back, Mike Hajka of DallasStars.com joins us to talk about the Jets Central Division rival. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN 1290.ca.